Ron Ananian.
I've never seen anybody overfill a cooling system. Incorrectly mixed, yes, but overfill a cooling system, never seen it happen. Because trust me, the system will give it up. It's like the ocean. It always gives up its dead.
The Car Doctor.
Make sure when you put that airbag down that you don't put it face down. You want to put it so that if it accidentally discharged, which has been known to happen on rare occasions, that it just blows up. Because if you put it face down and that thing deploys, it'll go through the roof of the house.
You have irritated the tool gods. You must now be smeared with the holy grease of disdain.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now,
your commander is on deck.
Here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Tom, where did you get that from? Who is that? Is that Tim Allen?
That was Buzz Lightyear.
Oh, okay.
The first one was Tim Allen.
Right.
That was Buzz Lightyear.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. Well, Tim Allen is Buzz Lightyear.
I beg your pardon. Buzz Lightyear is a real guy, a real person.
Tony, take him back and put him down in his chair, would you please? I thought that was Tim Allen from, what was that movie?
Toy Story.
Huh? No. There was another one that he did where he was in a spaceship. Now I can't think of the name of it.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
No, not Guardians of the Galaxy. It'll come to me during the show.
No, but that saved the world.
No. Galaxy Quest. Quest.
No. That one came from, that was Buzz Lightyear, actually.
Okay. You know, we probably should have done this before we started the show, so we talked more about cars.
But the first Tim Allen one was the one that came from Home Improvement.
Yeah, well, you know, Tim Allen was, he was kind of special. I got to tell you, I loved when he worked on that, on his old Chevy, the 50, was it 55 or 56 now? I can't remember. But he had a 55 or 56 wagon, and that was just neat. He, you know, we should get him on the show one day. Probably doesn't even know we're alive. But anyway, thank you, Mr. Rafer, once again for a superb opening, because I completely forgot what the heck it was I was going to talk about and relate to. Actually, I remember what it was, and it was sort of about airbags. So remember about a month ago, and by the way, this is Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, cardoctorshow.com, yada, yada, yada. All right, where would we be without Jerry Seinfeld? Yada, 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 we'd be lost. It's part of the English language now. Remember a couple of weeks ago, it's probably closer to 2 months ago, we had a girl by the name of Sarah. She called the show, and she was having a problem with her airbag, and the airbag light was on, and she had gone to the dealer, and the dealer told her that the vehicle needed to have the headrest replaced because the wires by the headrest were broken, and it was this big, convoluted, twisted story, and it just didn't make sense. Well, Sarah ended up finding her way to the shop from 8 hours out in Pennsylvania, which I was stunned by. I don't think anybody would drive 8 hours to come and see us. But she left me the car, and we've been looking at it off and on, trying to get through it. It was a laundry list of things, and trying to sort it out. And you know, we're glad to do it. It just takes time sometimes on the first time car that's been picked at by, you know, its bones have kind of been picked over. And got down to the airbag problem. We got into the airbag problem, and sure enough, I took the, you know, I ran codes, and it had a code for a fault in the driver's side headrest. This has ACR as active headrest restraint, AHR. I'm sorry, let me get my acronyms right. Active headrest restraint, where they blow off an airbag at the back of your head to support it in the event of a collision, so that your neck doesn't snap, which. It's kind of amazing technology that they can do this, but they're doing it, and they've got it delayed so that it doesn't, you know, bang your head forward. It's at the right moment. Long story short, as a result of the diagnosis, it's got an open circuit. So I take the back seat cover off and I look at the headrest, and sure enough, it's open. It is an open circuit because the airbag is not plugged in. The yellow connector, and it's always an airbag, is always yellow. Yellow is the safety side of this. There's a two-wire, you know, female connector and a two-wire male connector. And it was, of course, part of the problem is that on the headrest side, the wires have physically been removed from the yellow connector, which is now nowhere to be found. But that isn't what she was told. She was told that there was a wiring issue, that the wires were broken, and as a result, needed to needed to be replaced. So ordered a headrest a mere $500 later, or $450, whatever it was, and, plugged it in, and all of a sudden the airbag light goes out. And I guess the point of the story is, because I thought about this, I said, when we were talking on air, I never would have imagined that the problem could be something so bizarre. Because, you're always trying to think, when you call into me and ask me a car question, I'm kind of, taking it apart in my mind, saying, well, it could be this, it could be that. But it's very hard to see the obtuse or the unobstructed view of what it is that's wrong with the vehicle. And you kind of have to think outside the box sometimes. And I say that because, I think the repair shops have to be more responsible. I think it would be important. I think to demonstrate the broken connector or the missing connector or whatever it was, I think they should have taken a picture and handed it to her and say, here, this is a picture's worth a thousand words. As a matter of fact, I took a picture of both headrests side by side, the old, the new, the good, the bad, and we're going to post it up on Facebook this week and make a little video out of it. We'll do that sometime this week when we get back to work on Monday. Because I think it's something that you want to see, because it's just so clear cut. It's a problem. And, so be it. So, the point of this is that when you call me, understand, I can't see everything. So I need you to try and be as clear as you can. And I'll help you get to the bottom of it. But, also some things are beyond the control of any mechanic until he physically sees it. In the sense that, you're not quite sure. What's obvious to you that you see may not be so obvious to me. And, that was the whole point. So, hello and welcome. Ron and Annie, the car doctor here, 27 plus years. We're talking about cars, 43 years repairing cars, just sharing what I do every day, each and every day. And I love what I do. It's great to be able to do it and fix cars, even in this day and age. They've gotten much more complicated. This is an interview-free hour. We're going to be taking calls throughout the hour. I've got a couple of emails I want to talk about. I want to talk about this. I've got a piece of paper in front of me from the folks at Associated. Maybe I'll do that real quick. We talk about technology and what's involved and how cars have, become what they are, these giant batteries, these giant computers on wheels. But we don't talk enough about the battery and how critical a battery is. There's still some things today that still make absolute sense. It's got to have good tires. It's got to have a good battery. It needs its maintenance, regular oil changes. It's still that way if you're planning to get life out of it. Listen, if you're planning to buy the car, drive it for 2 years, turn it back in, or 3 years and turn it back in, hey, more power to you. Don't do anything. I do 4 oil changes and turn it in. I don't even know if I change the oil if the manufacturer didn't require me to, which is something I've always wondered and I've always pushed for. I think manufacturers have to require, as part of the lease, to change oil, although a lot of them now offer the maintenance plan. Although, we go back to they don't want to talk about what the vehicle really needs to service because it's a marketing thing. Buy the car, it never needs anything. But the folks at Associated, which is where I was going with this opening conversation, have created a battery charger that looks like a little R2-D2. It looks like something out of Star Wars. It's got a backlit display. It's got three different language options. It's polarity indicated and protected on a display. It's got an audible beeper. It charges all battery types, SLA, AGM, lithium, ion, EHB, deep cycle, gel cell, fully automatic or manually charging modes. It is OE, meaning vehicle manufacturers have approved it, and battery manufacturers have approved it. Did you ever think you'd see the day when you had to have a battery charger that was vehicle manufacturer approved in order to use it? What does that say about the battery? And yet how many of you want to put your own battery in and think you can get away with it? And all the resets and all the coding and all the different things you have to do with a battery. So, in any event, that's from the folks over at Associated. I believe the website, if you want to see a picture of this thing, it's kind of neat, is I don't have it in front of me, but I'm going to guess and say it's Associated Equipment or AssociatedEquip.com. What I'll do is I'll make sure I do it when we go to break. I'll have Tom look it up for me on a computer, and I'll put it out over the air in the next 5 or 10 minutes or so. So anyway, 855-560-9900. Ron and Annie, the car doctor, coming back right after this.
the best in car advice, give Ron a call, 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, and we're here. I should point out and mention that, you know, coming up March 17th, which is just 2 weeks away now, we're going to be up in the Westchester Marriott. We're going to be doing the radio show live from the TST big event up there, and there's all sorts of things going on. It's geared towards automotive technicians. I understand the event is sold out, but you could give them a call and just see, just to be sure. But, you know, MotorAge is going to be there, ATS Automotive, Automotive Test Solutions, NAPA, among them, Worldpac will be there. You know, so there's going to be quite a bit going on. I understand Launch will be there. Mitchell's slated to be there too, from what I'm reading. But we'll be up there at the Westchester Marriott in Tarrytown, New York. That's Saturday, March 17th, for the big event. We'll be doing the broadcast. I think we're doing the broadcast from 12 to 2, but Tom hasn't told me that yet. I'm not sure how he's going to do that. But you will be getting a live broadcast either that Saturday or the following Saturday. You will hear that that remote broadcast as we bring it to air. So we're looking forward to that. We want to thank the folks over at TST, TSTseminars.org, TSTseminars.org, for having us as we get the chance to get out of the studio and, you know, kind of spread our wings a little bit and see our peers and, you know, show Tony the light of day. Tony likes that we take Tony out once a year. We air him out and put him back in to, you know, kind of keep him going, keep him fresh. Mr. Ray has a comment.
I'd be careful taking him out.
Oh.
Remember the last time we took him out?
Yeah,
we all almost got arrested?
I know. Well, you almost. What do you mean almost? I promised the cops we wouldn't go back to Tarrytown for a year. It's been a year, so now it's safe. So, but, you know, it is what it is. Let's get over and talk to Carlton up in Maine, 05 Toyota Tundra, with some rack and pinion, or had some rack and pinion issues. This ought to be a doozy. Good, Carlton. What's going on, babe?
Well, it's not the rack and pinion that's the problem. It's the horn didn't work afterwards.
Oops. So,
I worked on the panic. If I push the panic on the key, it works. But it doesn't work. It doesn't work on a steering wheel.
Okay. Did you go back and talk to the shop after they did it? And what did they say?
And he didn't really want to deal with it. But I checked the connections under the seat. That's what I found online that I should do. He didn't want to deal with it at all. He didn't want to do anything.
How soon after the rack was done did the horn stop working? Was it immediate?
Immediate.
Okay. So somewhere, somehow, well, and the airbag light is on, I understand?
The airbag light is on also.
All right, so we've got to pull fault codes, and I'm going to bet and say that we've got a clock spring issue for whatever reason. You know, the clock spring is the connection, if you will, between the horn pad and the rest of the vehicle so that you can turn the steering wheel and not lose contact with different circuits for airbag activation and horn activation and so forth. You know, it's likely a bad clock spring. How it's related to putting the rack in, you know, maybe they didn't. Well, I can tell you what happens if they did not, you know, fix the steering wheel in one position, and you know, by chance the steering wheel spun around, because what will happen is the steering wheel will just sit there and spin infinitely when it's not connected to the rack, and if they unwound the clock spring, you know, oops. And
it did.
Yeah,
I know, because this when I got it back, he hadn't tightened up the steering wheel underneath the vehicle at all.
Right.
And like, yeah, I couldn't even drive it down the road.
Right.
I'm going to wind it back up like a clock spring.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, it's hard. I've done it on some clock springs. I can't say I've done it on everyone. You know, I've sort of straightened out some problems when you get lucky and when you're on a budget, but chances are you're going to have to buy a clock spring, which, as a guess, $150, $200 for the part. I'm just sort of surprised that the guy doesn't want to deal with it. Let me ask you one question. How did you pay for the repair?
This is a guy that does it on the side. It does in a regular shop.
Right.
I was trying to save some money.
Right.
He does mechanic work, and I bought the parts, and he put them in.
Right, and you paid for it cash.
Yes.
Yeah. End of conversation.
So, right. Yeah, exactly. Right. I was just trying to save some money, and it never works out.
It never works out. And it doesn't. And it doesn't. And you know what? It doesn't for him, and it doesn't for you. It creates hard feelings all around. And I get it. I get it why mechanics do that. And I'm not going to sit here and judge it. I'm just going to say I understand it. It's very hard for mechanics to make a decent living in auto repair. It's a grueling, grinding job. And I think as a result, it's what creates the problem, or part of the problem anyway, or it's partially responsible. It's the age old issue. You know, why do people still do it? Because people will go and pay to support it, and they think they're getting the deal.
Exactly. Right.
I bet you you'll think twice about it before you do it again. And be glad it was on something so old. And I consider an 05 a fairly old vehicle at this point.
Well, it is, but I've kept it up good.
Right. Well, my point is, if that was a 15 or a 16 Toyota, the technology is just, we had a call last hour, I think it was last hour, from someone up in Maine, and he was explaining, Tom, and he was explaining how his mechanic doesn't have a scan tool. How can you not have a scan tool in 2018 and you're working on cars?
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling to me.
You got to have that for everything.
Well, you're doing a disservice both to yourself and the customer. You know what? It's your responsibility. It's my responsibility to service and repair the car as it's needed, not based on your pocketbook, not based on your budget. And because the shortcut I take now always comes back to bite both of us later on, and it creates hard feelings, and you don't want to create those hard feelings. That's the problem. You're going to have to get it scanned. Get it scanned. It's likely a clock spring issue, which means the airbag, the horn pad has to come off, which contains the airbag in it. You're going to have to follow a procedure. You know, make sure you disconnect the battery, allow the system to bleed down, so on and so forth. And you'll have to get the steering wheel off, and then you'll be down looking at the clock spring, whether or not it's unwound, or whether or not this poor guy just happened to be the lucky one in the hole that day.
I think I'll have a dealer take care of that.
We had a 2011 Jeep Liberty the week before that we did a water pump on. When we do a cooling system repair, like a lot of shops, we'll run the heater to verify that the vehicle has heat, and we've burped it of all the air, so we're giving the customer back a vehicle that works. We did all that. The blower worked. Everything was fine. Got a phone call Monday. It was a week ago Friday. Got a phone call Monday that the blower stopped working, or the blower didn't work for them, and they had to bring it back. It turns out it had a bad blower motor. I've got to tell you, Carlton, had nothing to do with us. The blower motor died. We put a blower motor in it. I took the old one out. It was frozen solid. Put a blower motor in it. The car's fixed. Sometimes it happens. Thanks for the call, Carlton. Good luck, and I wish you the best. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, coming back right after this. There you go, Tony. Hit the red button. That's it. I'm sorry, folks. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor. We're just trying to help Mr. Atwood from... he's hitting the wrong buttons today. I don't know. Either the mic wouldn't go on, so either Tony missed a button or we just launched a missile at North Korea. I'm not sure what happened, whatever the case might be, or the Jets training camp. So one or the other. Let's go over and talk to... Is that Colm in Norwood, New York? 855-560-9900. You're on with the Car Doctor. Let's talk. What's going on?
Ron, good afternoon.
Yes,
always
sir.
Appreciate this. This is Carl. Take up the whole hot topic of self-driving vehicles. And the question is, to your knowledge, is anyone currently looking into the, what I'd call, unknown unknowns, the prospect of electrical signals from whatever source seriously adversely affecting the car's behavior on the road?
Yes. The federal government does actually have a program for electromagnetic waves, EMWs, and they're also looking at people hacking into the systems and taking them over at a very high level. because it's a matter of national security.
And it certainly is, yeah. Because if there is a 50-mile jam due to two autonomous vehicles hitting, God forbid, I would not want to be one of those two or even related. And my whole passion for this dates back 62 years to 1956. Raised on World War II by World War II veterans, I noted then at age 8, Ron, that in the Mediterranean, German glider bombs were attacking. They were manless and remote controlled, and they could be misdirected away from the target ship by anyone at the ship's rail holding an electric razor buzzing, aiming it at them. They'd veer sharply away. And as I wanted to state, in March 91, on a simple Chevy Monte Carlo V6 4.3 throttle body, my mother's car, which I maintained, I had actually, undeniably, a runaway, and there were no simple-minded causes, like a carpet, stuck cable, rubbish. But the thing is, I would direct all listening, including you, to the area, my home city back then of Philadelphia, PA, at the Philadelphia Zoo, coming off the expressway on an uphill exit, lift my foot, slow down, and then a sudden abrupt surge of acceleration all the way to the street. And it is not that it happened and no cause could be found, of course not, but rather where it happened. And if anyone cares to Google Earth, that area, the main attraction is called Zoo Tower, which is a railroad control hub and still present there, with everything above ground, subground, and there are telemetry, high amp current, signal lines festooning for a mile.
And on that note, I think we're going to go
unlock
on.
Unlock this door.
And I think on that note, we're going to unlock this door and head over to Mick from Oregon. Let's go over and talk to Mick. Mick, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, sir. What's going on?
Well, I got some information that we talked about last week.
Yeah.
You wanted me to check fuel pressure.
Yep.
And manifold vacuum pressure. Okay. The fuel pressure at idle is 17 pounds, and at 2,000 RPMs, it goes to about 20. Is that normal?
Sounds low. This is a poor fuel-injected 4.0 Jeep, right?
Yeah, for 4-liter.
Okay. What was manifold vacuum?
Okay, the manifold vacuum at idle is 16 to 17, and then acceleration to 20.
Yeah, that's normal. Yeah, okay.
And then, but so when you throttle it up, it loses its vacuum. It drops down to zero, and then it comes back.
And that's a normal occurrence, you know, because of you're opening the throttle plates, and there's equalization between atmospheric pressure and the engine itself. But okay. that doesn't bother me. That doesn't bother me. Was there something else I wanted you to check? I'm trying to remember.
I don't have a scope, so I wasn't able to check the camera crank sensors.
Okay.
But I've changed them, but I'm fairly certain that they're working because I'm getting 5 volts at the computer off the feed.
And you weren't before, correct?
I wasn't, but I was testing it wrong. So I plugged it into the computer and tested it, and then I was getting the 5 volts.
Well, because didn't this problem originally start out as some sort of
vehicle speed sensor?
Right, right, right. It started out as a 5-volt reference loss or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So let's go back to fuel pressure. You've got what for fuel pressure at idle?
Okay, at idle, 17 pounds.
This is the engine's running.
With the engine running.
Yeah, that's way low. That's way low.
2,000 RPMs, it's a 20. Now, I went out and I checked it again today, just for giggles. Today when I did it, the needle was oscillating really fast between like 15 and 20. I mean, it was just, you could hardly see it. It was moving so fast. And then when I idled it up, it cleared out and steadied. It steadied out at 20.
Well, there's not a lot to look at here. This is either your fuel pressure gauge is broken, all right? You've got the adapter on wrong. I'm just giving you all the possibilities. You've got the adapter on wrong, or you've got a fuel pressure problem, because if memory serves me correct, and I would tell you to look up the spec, but if memory serves me correct, at idle, this should have 45 to 50 pounds of fuel pressure.
That's what I thought, too.
So it's at 17 pounds, you've got an issue. All right.
Okay.
So, you know, here we go, right?
Uh-huh.
I think our conversation a month and a half ago started where you had 5-volt reference problems and you changed, and it was vehicle speed sensor related. If I remember right, didn't you have a 502 or a 505 fault code or something?
I had a
507?
It was for the vehicle speed sensor.
Yeah. And I remember you changed it, and then the characteristics of that problem changed, and then the vehicle developed this problem.
Yeah, I had a P0720.
Okay, right. That's what it was. I see a few vehicles during the week and on the weekend.
Right. No, I understand.
So, you know, now that's why I said last week, let's go back to square one. Let's diagnose this like technicians. Let's go start over. If you've really got 17 pounds of fuel pressure,
mm-hmm.
No, something's wrong. Something's way wrong. I'm surprised the truck's running. So, you know, let's talk about how dirty's the filter. The filter's got to be plugged for it to have that it can't. Because I got to tell you, it's rare when I've seen a fuel filter. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's rare when I see a fuel filter, you know, limit operation to this degree. It's amazing what a fuel filter will put up with. Not to say that a plugged fuel filter won't shorten pump life, where if you call me back next week and go, Ron, the fuel filter was plugged solid, I put a filter on it, the truck runs great, I'm going to tell you to get ready to put a fuel pump on it, because it's 20 years old, it's got 180,000 miles on it, and you just made the 80-year-old man run a 3-minute mile. you've just abused the holy heck out of it. So,
right.
You know, get ready to do a pump and do it at your convenience, not at the vehicle's convenience. So,
exactly.
Let's focus on fuel pressure this week.
Okay. The pump and filter are in the tank.
Right. This is a 98, is it not?
Yeah.
The filter, isn't the filter frame mounted in 98? No, I think you're right. I think they are all right.
Yeah, so, I think it's in the tank, so I will be dropping the tank.
Right. So guess what? You're gonna put a pump in it.
Yeah.
So you got an O'Reilly Auto Parts by you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, get over to O'Reilly Auto Parts. Tell them what you got. Let them ask them. You know what's a good fuel pump module? And I like doing the fuel pump modules. You're gonna get a new sending unit. You're gonna get all new parts. Everything's there. You don't have to swap anything over. It's a little more expensive. But in the long run, it's going to come back to benefit you, because I don't think you're going through all this to get rid of the vehicle next Tuesday.
Right, right. I have one question.
So I'll tell you what, before you ask that, Mick, before you ask that question, let me pull over and take the pause so I don't run over, and then I'll come back to you. We'll talk about it from there. And by the way, it's O'ReillyAuto.com for anyone looking up for information about them. Mick, don't go away. I'll be back right after this, 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor.
Don't call us.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
Welcome back. Let's go over and we'll continue our conversation with Mick from Oregon. Mick, you're still there?
Yes, sir.
You had one more question.
Yeah. So when I drop the tank and get the pump out and filter out, is there a way when I have the filter or the pump to, like, test it or check it to determine that it is bad?
Well, you just did.
Well, with the gauge.
Well, I mean, there it is, 17 PSI. It's the only other thing you could do is verify proper voltage and see what sort of amperage the pump is pulling if you want to get into the electrical side. If the voltage is there, the amperage should be there unless you see a wiring harness issue of some type. But, I've got to say, I think I've only seen current as a problem once, and it wasn't the pumps, it wasn't the harness issue, it was actually the pump itself. It was the way the wiring was, there was an issue inside the tank with the way the wiring was shorting out against the sender. At that point, is that the original pump?
Yeah.
And it's a what year vehicle?
98.
It's got how many miles on it?
180-some.
Yeah, I think you're done. It's always possible. It's always possible you've got a bad gauge, because that's very extreme. All right, that's very extreme.
O'Reilly's.
Yeah, I would take that gauge and screw it onto something else. Screw it on a known good vehicle. If that vehicle is supposed to have 30 pounds of pressure and the gauge reads 30 pounds, the gauge is right.
Mm-hmm.
If you screw it on a vehicle that's supposed to have 30 pounds of pressure and it reads 17, then the gauge is broken.
Right. I'll check that.
Right.
Would that low fuel pressure, would that cause it to backfire?
Sure, lean miss. A lean backfire.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
In the intake?
Sure.
Like it's been doing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. A lean backfire. Like that?
Yeah.
Remember, an engine's a big air pump, and a lot of things are happening at correct time and moment. The only other question I have in the back of my mind with this vehicle is why the timing marks were off. You couldn't find top on the balancer, and I'm still sorting that one out in my head. I haven't come up to an answer yet.
There's a notch in the pulley, but there's no index on the cover.
Right. So there's, short of pulling the timing cover, I'm trying to come up with a reasonable way to verify top dead center. And I'm waiting for a 4-liter 98 to come in.
I did it with a balloon and a hose.
Right. Right.
And then.
Right.
So anyway.
But anyway, let's focus on fuel pressure. If you have any doubts before you change the pump, call me next week. If not, if you can prove that pump doesn't put out pressure, then let's put a pump in it and let's go from there.
Okay.
All right.
I will go this way then. Thank you.
All right, Mick. Good luck. Keep me posted. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming right back. Don't go away. Real quick. Oh, yeah. Here we are. Let's answer this email. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor here, by the way. Great show. Listen every week. It's one of my first in my lineup. I look forward to your insight and repair mindset. I want to make a quick comment on the push towards electric vehicles. This comes to us from Paul. I'm not sure where Paul is from, 443 area code. One thing I don't hear much talk about is the additional strain all these vehicles will place on the national power grid while charging. Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of it, too. Also, where will all that additional electrical energy required come from? I've also seen how some folks that have all the electric vehicles don't want to charge them at home due to the increased drone cost. That seems kind of self-defeating to me, as that is one of the points as they try to sell them on. Bottom line is that it's extremely tough to beat the energy density of fossil fuels. I think that electric vehicles are definitely a step in the correct direction, but really not ready for prime time. You made a great point in your last show about how it's been a little more over 100 years, and we finally just have conventional gas and diesel mostly figured out. Makes me wonder what the next 100 years will be like. I think the concern is obviously emissions and, the pollution levels that the Earth is going through and what we're doing to it. The problem is, okay, what I understand from what I read is things are controlled here in the U.S. Like, we're doing a pretty good job of cleaning up the environment and the air quality. But in a lot of other countries, among which I've read China, Russia, don't do as great a job of policing emission controls there, and a lot of open emission violations as compared to our standards. And the issue becomes, how do you get them to correct their stuff? And if they don't want to deal with internal combustion engines, then you got to come up with an alternate source that says, hey, no matter what you do, you can't pollute with an electric car. And that's why I think we're being pushed in that direction, whether it's you know, by the government, the Illuminati, or, you know, anything in between. So that's what I think's going on. Paul, there's more to Paul's email. We'll talk about that next week, because I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you the mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.